What do you do when your head of job statistics publishes numbers you don't like? Well, if you're President Trump...
You know what I did? I fired her. Right. And you know what? I did the right thing.
Mr. President, why did you fire the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Because I think her numbers were wrong.
Yes, the head of the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, Erica McIntyre, is out of a job after the latest U.S. employment report showed the weakest U.S. jobs growth since the pandemic. Trump said job numbers must be fair and accurate. There's no evidence that the BLS statistics weren't fair, but has President Trump hit on a broader point? Are economic statistics getting less reliable? This is the Economics Show from the Financial Times. I'm John Byrne Murdoch, the FT's chief data reporter, and to answer this question, I'm here with Erica Groshen. Erica was the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2013 to 2017 under President Barack Obama. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Now, look, things move very quickly in the world of President Trump. So let me start by saying that we're recording this 5 days after Trump sacked the other Erica, Erica McIntyre, from her position as BLS commissioner. Bearing that in mind, we do this thing on the Economics Show where we get our guests to rate something from 1 to 10. And on that scale, how worried are you about the future quality of US economic statistics in the aftermath of this dismissal?
I would say I'm at 8.
Right, that's pretty high. Now, look, we've got time to get into that and unpick why it's that high and perhaps why it's not even higher. But before we go any further, I do just want to stress for our listeners that the claims made in the president's post announcing the other Erica's dismissal were completely without evidence, not to mention, in fact, contradictory. President Trump said that downward revisions to payroll numbers under Presidents Biden and Harris had helped them, but argued the same thing hurts him. So not perhaps any surprising news there. But with that important caveat aside, let's get into this. You headed up the BLS for several years. Can you tell us what the role of commissioner involves and what the relationship with the White House typically looks like?
So the role of the commissioner is to be the voice of the agency, to help with strategic planning, guide the future direction of the agency, to deal with difficult decisions. So it's an internal role to steer the agency in the proper direction and a very external facing role to represent the agency. It is not to adjust the numbers.
I totally appreciate that. And I don't think anyone would be surprised to hear that there was never sort of direct pressure from the White House or anything like that. But things like the introduction of or retiring of different data series can affect the extent to which we understand different things. Was there ever even just a sense that certain statistics were becoming less convenient or that a president wanted to start counting other things for more political reasons?
Not while I was commissioner. There really wasn't any of that. That said, you know, one of the most important jobs of the statistical agency is to provide data to policymakers. And so you do have to be thinking about how to provide the data that they want in order to carry out policies in the right way. So the needs of the political appointees and even at people outside the government who are thinking about important issues do factor into decisions about what programs to prioritize. But that's in terms of providing the information, not in terms of arriving at an answer.
Of course. And although it's interesting that you mentioned that tension in sort of what data gets provided, because one of the things that's been talked about in recent months since President Trump returned to the White House is the idea of breaking down some of the silos between different US government departments. One of the assumptions there being that this is perhaps an effort to try and figure out where undocumented immigrants may be or that kind of thing. What is the role of the BLS in a situation like that, where there is maybe either an explicit or implicit demand to do something ostensibly neutral with the data, but that could obviously have negative impacts? If that had landed on your plate, how would you have thought about that?
So the role of a statistical agency is to produce statistical products. It is not to enforce policy. It's not about providing information that is used directly for enforcement purposes on individuals or companies or something like that. So when any kind of data go into the BLS, that is only to be used for statistical purposes, which actually has a very clear meaning in this world. So it would be in violation of the mission and of the ethics of a statistical agency to participate in any provision of data, to provide any data for those purposes. And that is really to protect the quality of the statistical information. The BLS can promise all of the respondents to its surveys and any data provider that that data will only be used for statistical purposes. But the idea that there should be more sharing of government data amongst the different parts is a very important one, and particularly the programmatic agencies like the unemployment insurance system, for example, and the IRS, right? Frankly, it makes no sense for them not to share their data with the statistical agencies so that the statistical agencies can improve statistics. And yet, that has been a barrier in the federal government. There was a evidence-based policymaking commission, a bipartisan commission that led to the Evidence Act, and that was signed into law by President Trump during his first term that intended to expand the sharing of data amongst agencies, particularly to benefit the statistical agencies. And that has been useful, but it hasn't gone the whole way. This begins to address a need that the statistical agencies have. The statistical agencies are still primarily reliant on surveys. Now we're entering a world where response rates are falling everywhere. Wherever you look, response rates are down. It seems to be inexorable. There's no silver bullet that anyone has found. At the same time, we have tons of data growing all over everywhere because everything's digitized, all transactions are digitized. And so Stats 3.0 will be going to many more blended data products because all of this digitized information is great, but it all has limitations. And so the statistical agencies can put together data with different strengths and different weaknesses and come out with good new products. But that's going to take investment. And investment is hard to do if you're being starved for resources. And that's the other problem that the statistical agencies have been facing.
You talked there about response rates, and yeah, any of our listeners in the UK will certainly be more than familiar with this. Several official UK economic surveys had their accreditation removed because response rates have got as low as 20%, I think, in the case of our labour force survey. Now, the US response rates are fortunately still higher than that, but as you say, they have been declining for some time. So is there a broader issue here of an erosion in the quality of economic statistics?
So response rates took a real dip during the pandemic and mostly recovered and then have continued their downward trajectory. That's a problem. Generally speaking, that the headline numbers, the national numbers, are still of a quality very similar to what they had before. Where we're really seeing a decline in availability and quality is of the more granular information. The geographic, demographic, industry detail that helps you understand what the headline number is doing and helps you design policies to address exactly where problems are.
Understood. But if we were to bring this back to the jobs report, the payroll number itself, is there any reason why the jobs revisions themselves might have become larger or more frequently downwards?
Okay. So companies, U.S. companies get 3 months to report their employment totals for any particular month. They're asked three times for that. And the number of companies that aren't making that first cut has gone down, while the number of companies making the third one hasn't gone down very much. And so we are getting some more revisions between first and third than we used to because we're getting fewer reports the first time companies are asked.
Do we know why that's been happening?
The typical answers are that there's a declining sense of civic responsibilities and nobody ever got promoted for getting their numbers to the BLS on time. When companies are really focused on the bottom line and making sure their staffs are as lean as possible, the lower priority things on their list may be ignored more often.
Understood. So there's no sleight of hand going on here. There's nothing partisan. There's no conversations happening. But the way these big trends show up is in the kind of downward revisions that we saw a couple of weeks ago.
Right. So it's always difficult to do imputations well at a turning point, at an economic turning point, because imputations say, well, what's the latest trend and apply that when you have missing data, right? And around turning points, the trend is changing. If you make your imputation method very sensitive, then you're just introducing noise into the system. If you make it not sensitive enough, you don't pick up the change in trend. And so BLS is constantly trying to find the sweet spot between those two goals, right? Not making it oversensitive, but still picking up the trend. And so they've made changes to really refine that judgment and make it clear which one they're choosing, but they don't choose it on a month-to-month basis. Their choices are then programmed into the computer, and then they run the program on the data that they receive, and it spits out the answer. So the revisions are not people sitting around saying, oh, I think it went up. No, I think it went down. That's not the process. In a longer run sense, we don't have an unusual number of downward revisions, but we do have serial correlation in revisions around turning points. So if the economy is slowing, you're going to get more negative revisions. And if the economy is picking up, you're going to get more positive revisions. And that can be explained by the imputation method, but also the fact that, you know, in normal times, when people aren't reporting quickly, it can be for all sorts of reasons, and those are going to offset each other. But if the reason that people aren't reporting is because many of them are growing really rapidly and they just, you know, haven't gotten around to it and they're kind of in turmoil because they're growing, right, then that's going to lead to upward revisions. And if the opposite is true, is that you have some shocks, some demand shocks hitting companies and they're having to shrink and they're in the turmoil of shrinking or failing or something like that, and that's why they're reporting slowly, and that's happening to many of them, then you're going to see downward revisions. You can see this happening in the past around turning points, right? And you can see these trends happening, you know, for a long time.
Bringing this perhaps slightly closer to something US specific then, or even specific to this moment, there have been significant federal funding cuts, but obviously this has been accelerated recently with the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, and we've also had the case of Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick closing the Federal Economic Statistics Advisory Committee. Now, can you talk a little bit about how these funding squeezes make all of these sort of adjustments and calculations and efforts that you've just been talking about harder?
Yeah, boy. So the ending of the advisory committees, let me just talk about that briefly. Those cost almost no money. The advisors are not paid. So it's just, you know, travel for the people who don't live in DC to get together. So this is free advice offered to the agencies, and it helps the agencies deal with difficult problems and plan out modernization and understand what users' needs are. And so ending them, and particularly ending them because you say their work is done, makes no sense at all, because that work is never done. Statistical agencies always have to be working hard to improve. So modernization and dealing with problems is a little bit harder when you don't have the input of outside experts coming in with new ways of thinking about things and advice. Over the past more than 10 years, the funding for the statistical agencies has gone down in real terms and in some cases in nominal terms, but it's gone down to BLS around 20%. The agency has less money for modernization and for designing new programs and new products to meet new needs. And that interferes with an important part of the mission. Now, what this particular administration has done is, since January, there has been a hiring freeze on. So that has meant that the agency, BLS in particular, has not been able to deal with any of the normal attrition that it has. There have been two programs offered that have meant that additional people have stopped working for the agency. So BLS is down probably now close to 20% of its staff. And that is not sustainable. I mean, it's through heroic measures and moving people around to positions that they have to get trained for quickly that the BLS has been able to continue to put out the high quality data that it does. They've lost contract workers. They've lost leases on office space and things like that for no good reason. And all of that has made the life of the statistical agencies much more difficult. But they have not missed any deadlines. There have not been any glaring errors in anything they've put out. They have continued to serve the public amazingly well, but I don't know how much longer it can last.
So is one way of thinking about this that while Erica McIntyre's departure was very, very concerning and obviously a stunning and shocking event in and of itself, perhaps it's these funding cuts, perhaps these are more likely to directly erode the quality and reliability of US economic statistics?
Yes. First of all, it's widespread across the whole system, not just this particular agency. Although I will say that the statistical system is cheap compared to almost any other thing you can think about. I mean, it provides this incredibly essential infrastructure for our country, for the economy. And it doesn't cost anywhere near what roads and bridges or defense or any of those other important things cost, right? It's really very inexpensive. The entire budget of the BLS is about $700 million. That's peanuts. I've forgotten. I think it's like $4 per American or something like that, right? And so to make a huge increase in the ability of the agency to provide information that we need for monetary policy, fiscal policy, investments, family decisions, you know, if you increase the budget by 50%, it's amazing what you could get.
Absolutely. So if I were to then give you the opportunity, if you were in charge of things, by which I mean above the position of BLS commissioner, how would you address some of the issues you've raised here in terms of the erosion of the quality of these statistics?
Well, I'd say, you know, go big or go home, right? I would collect most or all of the principal federal statistical agencies, and I would put them together in one big Stats USA. I would take the chief statistician of the U.S., who now resides in an office with about seven other people and is not in charge of any statistical agency, and I would empower the chief statistician of the U.S. by putting that person in charge of this federal statistical agency, which I'll call Stats USA, right? And then Stats USA would not report to any cabinet member. It would be an independent agency, something like the Federal Reserve. It would have secure multi-year funding, and it would be able to have the skills and the IT system and the independence to really pursue activities that the agencies right now don't do and in some ways can't do. Being a party to the development of data standards throughout the economy and developing feeds from companies, from organizations, from government agencies, so that this comprehensive information is coming in regularly and would allow the agency to share data amongst all of the different needs for statistics and also to create many more granular and timely statistics than they can make right now.
Sticking with economic statistics, but taking a slight segue, what if I asked you a broader question? What does the latest economic data say about the health of the US economy right now? We're obviously seeing a cooling labor market where everyone's looking for the early impacts of tariffs. What's your read on where the US economy is as a whole right now?
Cooling. I mean, I think that that's a really good word to use. We seem to be entering a period where inflation rates are creeping up and economic growth is slowing further. So I think we are entering a very difficult period for monetary policy. I would say in large part because of changes in federal policy of various kinds, the tariffs and things like that, that have increased uncertainty and forced companies to change their activities. What it will be going forward will depend on this policy and really what kind of momentum is building up behind this slowing. Is it going to get worse, or is this just going to be a lull? Turning points are really hard to predict. So the indicators that I've looked at, none of them are saying we're definitely heading into a recession, but a lot of them are flashing yellow.
Okay, well, it's time for a break. When we come back, I'm going to be asking what the firing of the head of the BLS means for the data coming out now.
With AI and technology changing nearly every industry, the need for speed in updating new monetization models is essential. Millions of businesses worldwide rely on Stripe to grow their businesses their way. From the latest AI leaders scaling every second to centenarian household names launching exciting new revenue streams, Stripe Billing is built to handle them all. Learn how Stripe Billing can power any business or monetization model you can think of at stripe.com/billing.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
President Trump was clearly unhappy with the statistics that the BLS was reporting, again, whether for good or bad reasons, probably bad. But do you think his firing of Erica McIntyre could put pressure on economic statisticians, both in the BLS and more broadly, to put a more positive spin on economic data now?
It is something I fear. But can I read you a quote that came from the first BLS commissioner?
Please.
He said that he had a profound commitment that statistics produced by the BLS would be devoted to the fearless publication of the facts without regard to the influence those facts may have upon any party's position or any partisan's views. That was 1884, and that has been a mantra within the BLS since then. And so this is baked into the culture of the agencies. The firing of the commissioner for such partisan reasons is in direct contradiction of this important tenet of the federal statistical system. So what do I think is going to happen? Well, in the short run, I think that Bill Wiatrowski will make sure that there is no change at the BLS.
So that's Bill Wiatrowski, who served as an interim BLS commissioner twice before, including replacing you when Trump was in office in 2017.
Yeah. And over the coming year or two, we'll all be watching very carefully. Who is this new commissioner of the BLS? What do they say their goals are? What changes are they making? If they are like all the previous BLS commissioners, then they'll have a more difficult task because people are going to be looking for and worrying about them changing things for the wrong reasons instead of for the right reasons. If they come in intending to change things for the wrong reasons, they are going to run into resistance from the agency. And it's not clear how that will go, but I would expect resignations. I would expect reorganizations, you know, in order to make the changes so that the commissioner could fudge the data. A lot of processes need to be changed. So it will be noticed. People at the BLS will know it is happening. And I would think that there would be, as I say, resignations, whistleblowers, that sort of thing. And in the longer run, then you could get hiring people only for partisan purposes, an erosion of the data and the trust in the data. And then we go to a world where we are making what's technically known as lousy decisions because we don't have good information to base them on.
Yes. So what we're saying here is significant churn in personnel would be a very much a red flag that not good things are happening here. But then assuming this, the ship remains a steady ship and goals and methodologies remain unchanged, the fact that we're just going to see external worry and concern here about the quality of those statistics does surely increase this atmosphere of uncertainty that we already had in the economy. And so is there a case here where maybe what you were talking about earlier in terms of the cooling of the US economy right now, in part due to increased uncertainty, this move by President Trump could exacerbate that?
Yes, absolutely. You could even get a big decline in response rates as people say, why bother responding anymore? And that would raise the standard errors and the ability of the statistics to inform us about the state of the economy. So that there's a cascade of impacts here that are all damaging for economic growth going forward.
Moving to other parts of the U.S. economic and financial infrastructure, after the ouster of Erica McIntyre, President Trump renewed his calls for Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, to leave his post. Do you see a world in which Trump actually makes that decision?
So I spent almost 30 years in the Federal Reserve system before I became BLS commissioner. I think that ultimately there will be two possible breaks on that. One would be that the financial markets will quietly or loudly prevent the president from going down that road, right? That leaders from that world will have enough influence to keep that from happening. If, however, the president tries to do that, then maybe the Supreme Court will take that step. So I kind of don't think it will happen because there are likely to be those two ways to prevent it. But if the president decides to try to fire Chairman Powell, then I think you're going to get another big source of uncertainty that will put a further damper on the economy, because internationally, people will lose more trust in the U.S. Investments will dry up coming into the U.S. You will have probably upward pressure on interest rates and things like that. So I think it would be really damaging to the country as a whole. And I hope that prospect is enough to make anybody who's influential on the president restrain any impulse he has in that direction.
Right. And I guess we saw even with Liberation Day that it was the impact on the stock market and then the calls President Trump was getting from key figures in the financial industry that perhaps helped rein in his worst impulses there. And that with something like removing the chair of the Federal Reserve, that is an even starker thing to do, which perhaps means that, well, touch wood, it won't happen.
Yes. I often use the Federal Reserve as an example. Also, one of the important aspects of federal statistics, that although Say's law, this idea that supply can create its own demand, doesn't apply in many cases, with federal statistics, it often does. So here was the BLS that was created with a focus on providing nascent unions and employers with trustworthy information to advance industrial peace, creating useful statistics that then became the basis of U.S. monetary policy. The dual mandate of the Federal Reserve comes right out of the products of the BLS. And so modern monetary policy was possible and was founded on the availability of trustworthy data on employment and inflation.
So it's the bedrock here that we're talking about, and without that, everything else falls apart.
That's right.
Erica, one other question that comes to mind here is that while this is somewhat unprecedented in the US context, we've seen other governments, countries like Venezuela and Argentina, do similar things in terms of firing senior government statisticians. What has the impact of those been, and are there parallels to draw here?
Absolutely. And I would add Greece as well. The benefits, if any, to doing that are short-lived, and the ultimate consequences are disastrous. In all cases, you had spurts of inflation and deep recessions afterwards. When you lose reliable information on the state of the economy, you get turmoil, you get chaos. It's not good for business. It's not good for the country as a whole. It's intentionally choosing to put on a face mask to temporarily, you know, blind yourself and think that that's going to improve your ability to perform.
Right. So even if there, one could conceive of there somehow being an uptick in the mood music just from changing the number, that's never been how it's materialized.
That's right. Countries have paid a huge cost in terms of their ability to perform. Because think about it, our economy, especially the U.S. economy, is founded on the idea that people are making individual decisions. Companies are making choices for themselves. And I'm not being told by the government what to do. Families are making choices for themselves. Local governments are making choices for themselves. And that will only be a benefit to us if they make good choices. And they can only make good choices if they have good evidence on which to base those choices.
Erica Groshen, thank you so much for joining us and imparting all of that wisdom.
And thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, that's all for this week. You've been listening to The Economics Show from the Financial Times. If you enjoyed the show, please do rate and review us wherever you listen. This episode was produced by Misha Frankel-Duval with original music from Breen Turner and sound design by Jean-Marc Eck. Our executive producer is Manuela Saragossa. Andrew Georgiadis is our broadcast engineer. I'm John Byrne Murdoch. Thanks for listening.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Group health insurance can challenge company budgets with large and unpredictable rate increases. Now, a new form of employer coverage called an ICHRA, or ICHRA, can help. ICHRAs make health plan expenses more predictable and affordable by tapping into a much larger risk pool. That means businesses know what to expect and what to budget. If you're tired of expensive surprises, plan on something predictable. Plan on an ICHRA. Learn more at ambetterhealth.com/ICHRA.